Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Well, what did you, the American people, think about yesterday's first day of public hearings in the impeachment inquiry? About moments like this, when Republican Congressman Devin Nunes, in his opening statement, directly addressed Ambassador Bill Taylor and Deputy Assistant Secretary of State George Kent.
I'd like to congratulate you for passing the Democrat Star Chamber additions held for the last weeks in the basement of the Capitol. It seems you agreed, witting or unwittingly, to participate in a drama. But the main performance, the Russia hoax, has ended, and you've been cast in the low-rent Ukrainian sequel.
Or there was this moment from Democratic staff lawyer Dan Goldman.
Regardless of what you call it, whether it's a quid pro quo, bribery, extortion, abuse of power of the office of the presidency, the fact of the matter, as you understood it, is that security assistance and the White House meeting were not going to be provided unless Ukraine initiated these two investigations that would benefit Donald Trump's reelection.
So, low-rent Ukrainian sequel, quid pro quo, bribery, extortion. The point is, presenting their arguments to the public by Republicans and Democrats is the point of these hearings. So we want to hear from you this hour on Point, the public's response to yesterday's impeachment hearings. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, we're going to talk with three reporters this hour in three key states across the country, pretty far from Washington, because we want to reach out to the American people. So we'll be speaking with reporters in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Florida. And joining us from Miami is David Smiley. He's political reporter for the Miami Herald. David, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us from Philadelphia is Julia Taruso. She covers politics and the 2020 election for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Julia, welcome to you.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks.
And also with us from Milwaukee, Wisconsin is Mayon Silver. She is a reporter and producer at WUWM 89.7 FM, and she is helping NPR with its 2020 election coverage. Mayon, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks so much.
Okay, Mayon, let me just start with you. I know you've been covering 2020 politics in Milwaukee for some time. On the heels of yesterday's many hours of testimony, what do you think the response from people in Milwaukee might be?
Well, this sort of varied. I mean, many people on both sides of the aisle didn't really seem to be watching it too closely. Some people, I mean, there were exceptions to that, but people were at work Wednesday and not necessarily. It was also bitter cold on Wednesday yesterday. But the deal is that most people seem to already have their minds made up. And polling has also shown that there's more support for impeachment than before. So that's the trend in Wisconsin. In October, there was a poll, and it showed that voters were almost 20 points more supportive of impeachment than they were in April. And so that is something. And then there was also a Democratic super PAC surveyed voters in four states, including Wisconsin. And they found that it's about a 50-50 split, but that a little bit more are supporting impeachment as opposed to those who oppose it.
Interesting. Well, you've actually generously given us some tape of interviews that you've done with folks in Wisconsin. This is Lynn, a voter from Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. She's traditionally voted Republican, didn't vote for President Trump in 2016, and she told you, Mayon, that she won't this time either. So let's play a moment from your conversation with Lynn.
Are you following the impeachment proceedings?
Mildly, with disgust and with interest and with fear and trembling.
And what's causing that fear and trembling?
My political opinions and the fact that I would like to be rid of the president.
That's Lynn, a voter in Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. David Smiley, let's hop down to Florida. Same question to you. What do you think the response from folks that you've talked to in Florida is to this first day of hearings from yesterday?
This is probably not a great for radio answer, but I think it's going to take more time than just one afternoon to get a real response to the public impeachment proceedings. I think for the people who are really invested in what's happening and in watching and paying attention, they are already pretty firmly set in their opinions. If you're a Republican in Florida, you're likely pretty solidly behind President Trump, whether it's because you support President Trump or because you don't want to give ground to the Democrats. I don't know that these proceedings are really going to change many opinions. And the same on the other side. It's the sort of squishy middle that really holds the key for whether these proceedings actually yield results, whether it be in elections or in actually potentially convincing Florida's two Republican senators to flip and not support Trump if and when he is impeached in the House and it goes to trial in the Senate.
Right. And I have to say, I actually appreciate the fact that you can't survey all Florida voters in the course of an afternoon for us, David. Point well taken. But Julia, let me turn to you just again. Based on the reporting that you've done so far and what voters have been telling you over time, do you think yesterday's inquiries or yesterday's public hearing may shift the needle with anybody?
I'd have to agree with what's been said. I think, I mean, yesterday was the first major public day, but we've been talking about impeachment for a while. So there's been a lot of polling out there. It's been on the mind of a lot of voters. And, you know, Pennsylvania is deeply divided in terms of its opinion of President Trump. And on impeachment, it's the same thing. It's about, you know, according to recent polls, about a 50-50 split, although I think similar to Wisconsin, you're seeing those numbers tick up in terms of people who support impeaching and removing the president. And one thing I find interesting is both when you talk to people and when you look at the more detailed polls, it's not just that they're split over, you know, yes or no, but when you ask voters kind of, you know, what do you think this is all about? Voters or casual observers who support the impeachment hearing, you know, think the president broke the law. It's a constitutional necessity. Voters who oppose it call it fake news, anti-Trump propaganda. So there's a real deep divide, you know, over even what's going on in Washington.
Mm. Well, Mayan, let me turn back to you. I suppose something that we hear on this program a lot is that while voters may be paying some attention to the impeachment inquiry because it's kind of hard to escape it, on the other hand, it may not be the number one thing that they care about. Is that the sense that you're getting there in Wisconsin?
Yes, that is the sense. From the Democratic perspective, so Democrats just knocked on over 50,000 doors around the state, which was symbolic for them because it's over twice the number of votes that Trump won Wisconsin in 2016. And I talked to the chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, and at this point, he says that they're there to listen and answer questions about people. And they say that what they're hearing from people is that there's a strong interest in kitchen table issues like stricter gun laws, health care, the impact of the trade war. And actually, that's really what was playing out in my talking to voters, both in the past couple days and over the past few weeks. People are saying that they from both perspectives, I think conservative voters are making the case that this is a diversion and this is not looking the Congress is not doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're avoiding. And from the Democratic perspective, I think they're trying to maybe take a more safe approach and focus on issues that they're hearing from people like climate change, homelessness, unemployment, that kind of thing.
Well, let's just go to a call here. We want to hear from you. Yesterday's first day of public hearings in the impeachment inquiry. The real audience is you, the American people. So what did you think? Did you care? Did it change your mind? Were there new revelations that got you to think differently about impeachment? Or are you focused on other things? Let's go to Andy, who's calling from Watertown, Massachusetts. Andy, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm an independent, but I want, the reason I say that is because I don't have an opinion yet. The inquiry is to find out what happened. I want to know what's happened. I'm appalled at the one side stonewalling and making comments about things. I want to know what happened. I want to hear what's happening. This is an inquiry. There's nothing wrong with that. People, if they do something wrong in the politics, they need to be accounted. And we need to find out. We need to hear the information. I'm appalled at people trying to stop that information. And I feel the one side is trying to stop that information.
You're speaking about the GOP, Andy. Is that what you're referring to? Okay. So you will be paying attention then. I mean, tomorrow there's more hearings, 3 days of hearings scheduled so far for next week, a whole bunch of more witnesses. It sounds like you're going to be paying close attention.
I've been trying. I paid attention when I was a 9-year-old back for Nixon and for Clinton. And I have no, if someone's done something wrong, I want it to be called out and I want to watch it. I want to learn more. And that's what I think this process is. Thank you.
Well, Andy, thank you so much for your call. Julia, let me turn back to you. So at least Andy's one person there that's paying attention and it's sort of forming his opinion about the Republican Party as a whole. Do you get a sense as to whether or not views of the parties are shifting, whether or not it's individuals' views about the president?
Well, I think I think Andy and independents are kind of exactly the type of voter that really this is all going to come down to, whose opinion this will all kind of come down to, because as we've said, you know, the politics is extremely polarized right now and a lot of people are made up on the president and associate the president with the party. So I think his opinion and opinions like it are going to be really key.
Okay, so we are talking with reporters in three key states this hour about yesterday's first day of public hearings in the impeachment inquiry, about what voters have been telling them over time on the issues they really care about. Julia Taruso joins us, Mayon Silver's with us, and so is David Smiley. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about what you, the public, thought of yesterday's first day of public hearings in the impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump. Because, yes, this public phase of the inquiry is all about the American people as Democrats and Republicans try to make their case for and against impeachment. So we want to hear from you. Did you hear anything yesterday that altered your view or changed your mind or deepened your understanding of what's at stake in this moment? Or are you one of those folks who's more worried about things like healthcare, about your job, or cases at the Supreme Court, like those about Dreamers? I'm joined today by David Smiley. He's a political reporter for the Miami Herald, with us from Miami, Florida. Mayon Silver is with us. She's a reporter and producer at WUWM in Milwaukee, joining us from Milwaukee. And Julia Taruso is with us. She covers politics and the 2020 race for the Philadelphia Inquirer, with us from Philadelphia. So let's listen to one moment from yesterday's hearing where House Intelligence Committee Chair Democrat Adam Schiff really sort of laid out what he thinks is at stake as the House proceeds with its impeachment inquiry.
Benjamin Franklin was asked what kind of a country America was to become. A republic, he answered, if you can keep it. The fundamental issue raised by the impeachment inquiry into Donald J. Trump is, can we keep it?
So Adam Schiff there evoking history and the very well-being of the United States. Well, listen to what Bill Curtis of Cedarburg, Wisconsin, said to one of our guests, to Mayan Silver, yesterday. Mr. Curtis voted for President Trump and plans to vote for him again. He actually says it's the Democrats that are abusing their power and the impeachment proceedings are not important to him.
You know, most of us are working. We just want to get on with our lives, and we don't see the real reason for it right now. Now, if something comes out that changes that, maybe. But right now, I think most people I know are just, you know, trying to live their lives and don't see really the point of it right now.
That's Bill Curtis of Cedarburg, Wisconsin, speaking to one of my guests today, Mayan Silver. David Smiley, let me turn back to you here for a second, because I'm wondering if you can tell us about how voters in different parts or representing different aspects of Florida might be feeling about this moment. I mean, there's a very large and active Latino community, for example. Have you been able to chat with voters in the Latino community?
Yeah. And I think to your point about or to Schiff's statement about, America as a country in the immigrant community in Miami and around Florida, there's a lot of, and it's a very diversified diaspora, so it's not monolithic by any means. But particularly in South Florida, there is a lot of pride amongst the more than million Hispanic immigrants who have come and settled over the past few decades in America as institutions, its constitution, what the U.S. intends to be as a nation. And a lot of focus on just the direction of the country. However, Bill's touching on a fatigue that I think does exist among voters who aren't set in their opinions about this matter, where we've had basically four straight years of controversies around Trump and the presidency. And there is definitely a vibe among voters who are sort of undecided about just being frustrated with the amount of investigations and, you know, to some extent, Trump's numerous scandals and controversies have almost benefited him because they've sped up the news cycle so much that people can only take so much before they tune out. So I have definitely heard frustrations actually with the Democrats about it seems like they've been trying to remove Trump since he got into office. Why can't we just focus on getting our unemployment rate down and improving my wages and reducing the cost of living in Miami, which is one of the most expensive places in the country to live.
Julia Taruso, similar feelings from folks you've talked to in Philadelphia?
I think so. I was out at the polls on Election Day last week, and, you know, voters were talking about gun violence in the city and, you know, how that hasn't gotten much better lately. And they're talking about housing costs. And, you know, I don't think a single voter, I just sort of said, what's on your mind today, brought up impeachment. If I asked them about the 2020 presidential race, then it might come up 5 minutes into a conversation about all the many, many Democrats running. But I think that's absolutely the case, is that there's an oversaturation and just, there's still so many issues confronting people day to day that are much more real and impact them in a much more personal way.
Well, obviously, we're talking to the three of you in part because you are in three key swing states. And so Mayan, let me ask you, there in Wisconsin, you were saying earlier how there's been this sort of shift in polling around support for impeachment in Wisconsin. How much information or how many conclusions can we pull from that in terms of the effect that it might have on Wisconsin voters as we get closer and closer to the 2020 election?
Yeah, I think that the polls are interesting because they're showing that people are supporting impeachment a little bit more, but it's also showing how partisan it is, to the point of the reporter from Miami in the beginning. It's really something that Democrats, if you like Trump, you know, you're going to kind of find a way to ignore or not pay attention or, like, you know, say that it's okay the way that he's acting. I talked to one voter who said that they were watching the impeachment proceedings. He said he was a lawyer, and he pointed out that it was hearsay, that mainly the testimony that people are bringing forward. And he said, you know, I voted for Trump in 2016. I'm probably going to do it again. He said, I like what he does, not what he says. And so I think there are other Republicans who say that people are more focused on their pocketbooks and the economy is pretty good right now, so they're going to be okay with what Trump's doing. And the same thing with the Democrats. With this polling is showing that a very strong partisan split. The Democrats are thinking, you know, we don't really like Trump, and it's kind of playing out like the voter you heard, Lynn, where she said she actually also said that he's a bully and he's self-interested. And I'm not so I don't think that impeachment is making people's choices, people's political choices for them at this point. I think they're already kind of set. And those undecided voters, I did speak with some voters who felt that impeachment was a last straw and it's a bad precedent to set. And so anyway, I think ultimately people are going in Wisconsin. It's going to be a very close race down mm-hmm. to the wire, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, Mayan, David and Julia, hang on here for a second, because let's just let a lot of listeners in. I keep saying that this is an hour about what the public thinks. So let's talk, America. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Northborough, Massachusetts. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I'll have to tell you, the Mueller investigation, I found that there was collusion, and I was disturbed that there wasn't a charge brought forward. This time around, I haven't been so clear on what if he should be charged. But after watching those two gentlemen yesterday, who I thought were very credible and did not seem biased to me, and that was my biggest question going into it, is where their minds were. I thought they were both very credible, and I came away with that, with the opinion that it's a direct parallel to the Mueller investigation. I do believe that the president, after I listened to those two gentlemen, again, tried to get a foreign country to get involved in our election, which to me is, this is the foundation of our democracy, and I don't understand how anybody could come away after yesterday's hearing without feeling the same way. You must be drinking the Kool-Aid if you cannot realize those two gentlemen were honest, straightforward, yeah. And I didn't feel they were biased.
Well, Mike, hang on here. Hang on here for a second. Don't hang up. So those two gentlemen that you're referring to are Ambassador Bill Taylor and Deputy Secretary of State for European Affairs George Kent. They've both served in government for many, many decades in both Republican and Democratic administration. So I just want to actually, Mike, play a particular moment here. This is when Democratic staff lawyer Dan Goldman asked Ambassador Taylor what he thought about the Trump administration's dealing regarding Ukrainian foreign aid.
Ambassador Taylor, in your decades of military service and diplomatic service representing the United States around the world, have you ever seen another example of foreign aid conditioned on the personal or political interests of the President of the United States?
No, Mr. Goldman, I've not.
So, Mike, in Northborough, Massachusetts, just a quick question for you. Was it simple moments like that when the clarity of the witnesses came through that you found most affecting?
Absolutely. It's like someone reached up, pulled the switch on the light. It was so clear and so powerful, and that was one of many I felt yesterday. I don't understand how anybody could sit back and not realize that the commander-in-chief is trying to influence our democracy and control our elections through foreign means. Yeah.
Well, Mike, I'm going to take it back from you, but thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Adrian, who's calling from Tampa, Florida. Adrian, you heard Mike feel pretty strongly about yesterday's hearings. What do you think?
Well, you know, as I was saying earlier, my husband's a conservative and he's a Trump supporter. I'm an independent. and we differ on this particular issue, and we feel very, he feels very strongly that the Democrats are out to get Trump, and that they have been doing it since he's come into office. I feel that Trump has abused his position. However, having said that, I also feel that this has been going on for 3 years now, and the Senate is not going to impeach him no matter what happens in the House. So let's just go forward and let's get him out of office when next election comes. This is crazy because people are tuning out, even though what he did was an abuse of power.
Right.
But let's vote him out because it isn't going to work through the Senate.
Adrian, thank you so much for your call. That's Adrian from Tampa, Florida. So David, in Miami, let me just turn back to you here. I think Adrian's last point, I've heard frequently from voters that they see the outcome of this as being predetermined because of the makeup of the Senate. So that's one of the reasons why they don't want to waste all that much time on the impeachment inquiry. Have you heard that too?
Yeah, absolutely. And there are also Democrats who are afraid that this will ultimately make it more likely that Trump gets reelected as opposed to the opposite. Democrats are in this this odd position, I feel like, right now in the timing of this, where they are nearing the reelection campaign of Trump. I mean, really, he's already in it, but they're nearing election date 2020, and the impeachment proceedings are entirely wrapped up in the campaign. But on the other hand, we are still a year out from the reelection, and for voters who are not who are more casual observers of politics and tend to make their decisions later on, are not, put, you know, necessarily going to be super invested in what's happening. So I think there is sort of a friction there. But definitely, you know, voters, when you talk to them about presidential politics right now, and this has been said earlier on the program, but we're more likely to hear about policies and even, say, amongst, you know, never Trump Republicans, lifelong Republicans who absolutely did not vote for Trump in 2016 and do not want him to even be around come 2020, or have said to me that they will vote for him next November if the nominee is Warren or Sanders, or if it's essentially Trump versus Medicare for all. So even among conservatives who absolutely support impeachment, this whole thing is still wrapped up in the campaign.
Okay. Let's go to Paul, who's calling from Newcomb, New York. Paul, you're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate it. So I think what frustrates me the most, and I understand the political positioning and the political theater required for this, but I live in Representative Stefanik's district, and to hear her say the quotes that were played earlier on NPR today. I don't know that you played the soundbite on your show, but the two things were established that A, the money was delivered, and B, it's so disappointing because.
Well, Paul, hang on here for a sec. We actually have this sound, so for folks who want to know what you're talking about, I'm going to play it, and then I'll get your response why you're disappointed in your congresswoman. So here's Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik of New York laying out the GOP's argument that they claim the president did nothing wrong regarding Ukraine, because in the end, two things did not happen.
For the millions of Americans viewing today, the two most important facts are the following. Number one, Ukraine received the aid. Number two, there was, in fact, no investigation into Biden. Mr. Kent and Ambassador Taylor, you both spoke eloquently and passionately about the need to support Ukraine to counter Russian aggression, particularly during this very critical time. I agree with you in that assessment. And isn't it the case that the Trump administration has indeed provided substantial aid to Ukraine in the form of defensive lethal aid, correct?
That is correct.
And that is more so than the Obama administration, correct?
The Trump
defensive lethal aid.
Yes.
So, Paul in Newcomb, New York, that's Congresswoman Stefanik just laying out the GOP's argument here. What's your concern with that?
So, my concern is that I firmly believe in the rule of law, and I firmly believe in a rigorous investigation of the facts and to set those facts up to establish the question at hand, which is whether or not President Trump pressured Ukraine. But to abandon principle and to abandon character by stating something that is absolutely not the question. The question isn't whether the funding was released. The question isn't whether the investigation happened. The question is whether there was pressure applied in order for those things to happen, whether they happened or not. And so, you know, as someone who's grew up in a Republican household, as someone who is a pragmatist and tries to be as open-minded as possible, I don't believe we should be jumping to conclusions. I do believe we should go through this investigative process. But I don't believe we should be intentionally misleading the public and to say that millions of Americans have seen that, you know, these are the two questions that resolve this and prove right. that it's not a worthwhile investigation. It's demoralizing to me.
Hey, Paul, I've got to take a quick break here, but just very quickly, is it going to affect your vote in 2020, whether for the president or for your representative?
Both.
Both. Okay, that's Paul from Newcomb, New York. David, Mayan, and Julia, thank you for being so patient. Just stand by here for a second because we got to take a quick break. And we are talking about the public's reaction to yesterday's first day in the public hearings and the impeachment inquiry of President Trump. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, the Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about your reaction, about the public's reaction to yesterday's first day of public hearings in the impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump. I'm joined today by Julia Taruso. She covers politics and the 2020 race for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Mayan Silver joins us as well. She's a reporter for WUWM in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And David Smiley joins us. He's a political reporter for the Miami Herald. And yes, Florida, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, three key states in 2016, will also be very important in 2020. So let's listen to what one voter told Mayan in Wisconsin. This is Rob Machado, a graduate student studying political science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He didn't vote in 2012 and 2016 because he says he didn't want to participate in a system where the individual vote doesn't matter. But when he spoke to Mayan yesterday, he said that the situation surrounding the president's potential impeachment has galvanized him.
Whereas before I was planning on remaining apathetic, or I would pretty much always show up to vote, but I would purposely abstain from filling it in or write in somebody I know's name or something like that. Depending on who the Democrats nominate, I would now vote against Trump, which before the Ukraine thing, that wasn't the case.
That's Rob Machado in Milwaukee, and we want to hear from you again. Have you been galvanized by the impeachment proceedings, whether in opposition or support of the president? Mayan Silver, tell us a little bit more about Rob. It seems pretty interesting that he didn't vote in two elections, but this time around, he's going to jump in.
Yeah, and what's even more interesting is that he's actually a political science TA and grad student at UWM, UW-Milwaukee. So, yeah, it was really interesting. He seemed very motivated by the impeachment, and he seemed actually convinced based on simply the transcript. He said, read the transcript. It's in the transcript. There's enough evidence that Trump extorted Ukraine for political gain. And he had some other opinions. He thought whether Congress should impeach is another story because it's a political remedy. And, you know, but he said for the state of the country, he thinks the other institutions need to do something. Otherwise, it's just unsustainable, like an unsustainable precedent. So, yeah.
Well, Julia, let me turn to you here because it would seem I want to hear from all three of you about what the candidates who have come through your states, how they're talking about impeachment, and not just on the Democratic side here, because obviously the president and the vice president are doing rallies across the country as well. But I mean, if there's anyone who might try to use the impeachment proceedings in their favor, Julia, it could potentially be former Vice President Joe Biden, right? But you just went to a Biden rally last week. Was it kind of a feature of what Biden was talking about to Pennsylvania voters?
You know, interestingly enough, it wasn't. I think, you know, when all of this was starting to unfold, Biden's campaign did come off somewhat strong, pushing against some of the things that the president was saying about Hunter Biden. But at his he had a rally in Scranton. It was a couple weeks ago, and it really felt like kind of a homecoming for him because he is, you know, from Scranton and then Delaware. And he really, I think, focused on the middle class and talking about how he's a champion of the middle class. Interestingly enough, when I talked to voters afterward, they obviously I was at a Biden rally, so they overwhelmingly supported him because they think he has the best shot at beating Trump, and said that they wish he would come. They wished he had been a little stronger on Trump and had addressed it at the rally. So I thought that was interesting. But at the rally itself, it was really kind of about trying to appeal to what people in Scranton are thinking about and talking about.
Okay. David, I mean, we've been focused a lot on South Carolina, Iowa, New Hampshire. I don't know if you have you had a chance to see the candidates in action in Florida?
I have. They're not spending too much time here just because yeah. Florida's primary is on March 17 after Super Tuesday, which makes it less of a priority. But in appearances, I've been to two Biden fundraisers and a public appearance, and he honestly speaks more about Trump in the private fundraisers than he did in the public appearance that he made in Miami back in September. But in those comments to during these fundraisers, his comments were less aimed at impeachment than they were just generally at Trump's being unfit for office and a danger to the country. For the most part, in the public appearances that the candidates have made in Miami and around Florida that I have seen, impeachment has not been a top of line topic for any of them.
Interesting. Okay, well, let's go back to the phones then. Again, we want to hear from you out there whether you paid attention to yesterday's public hearings and the impeachment inquiry, whether it's changed your opinion on anything. Perhaps it's further deepened your support for the president. Van is calling from Augusta, Georgia. Van, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. Hey, I'm an independent voter. I did not vote for President Trump in the last election, but I constantly find myself being cast into the role of defending the president or the presidency, the institution itself, from the time he's come into office, from various people around me. I mean, it started out with, you know, constitutional crisis, constitutional crisis, constitutional crisis. Mm-hmm. And yet we've had fair and free elections at both the federal, state, and local level underneath this president, you know, where we changed out representatives. You know, I just heard of a story this morning that talked about Trump will not go quietly in the night if he's not reelected or loses the election. Yet, you know, the only example that we have to look at is, you know, the Democrats, where Stacey Abrams did not concede the election here in Georgia. I mean, I think there's been a tremendous amount of pressure put on the Democratic Party to impeach a person who they did not think was going to win an election to begin with. Mm-hmm. So you had the Mueller investigation, and now we have another investigation going on. And I think all of this has been really the detriment to the country itself and to really bringing us together.
Yeah. Van, just as a quick point here, I mean, you talked about Stacey Abrams in Georgia. Just last week we had a very close governor's race in Kentucky. And in that case, the Republican governor, Matt Bevin, who lost by a narrow count, he didn't concede either at the get-go. So it's not, I think there's multiple examples of put folks in close races being unwilling to concede on the night of the election, just as a point, Van.
I don't dispute your point. I think the what I'm trying to make or the examples I'm trying to use are where there's a lot of pressure being put out on the Democratic Party to take actions that I don't think are in their best interest, the actions that they're taking, right? And they're using examples after example after example that kind of comes back that they don't seem to apply to their own party and to their own constituents.
Okay. Actually, that's a really interesting point. Thank you so much for your call. So let's get a response from Robin, who's calling from Bowling Green, Kentucky. Robin, you're on the air. You heard Van from Georgia there saying that he doesn't think that continuously investigating the president is actually good for the Democratic Party. What do you think?
I disagree. I think all independents and Republicans should think about the precedents they're setting. Allowing the highest level of our office to get away with coercion, blackmail, whatever you want to call it. Think about the lowest levels. How many of us have had a boss that tried to coerce us into doing something we didn't want to do? Or our daughters into sexual favors? If we allow this at our highest office, where is it going to go from there? It would be rampant in our senators, in our representatives, in our governors, in our mayors, and our bosses.
Well, Robin, thank you so much for your call. Mayan Silver, I'm going to turn to you here. Lots of intense feelings for people when they call in here. I just wonder if when you're out there talking to voters, do you get the same sense of that overall people do have a very deep and intense set of feelings kind of about the state of the nation right now?
I mean, people definitely have their opinions and, you know, I think people have things that are important to them. I talked to a couple of Trump supporters who got really riled up when I talked to them about impeachment and used expletives and, you know, talked about how Nancy Pelosi, you know, was just a crook and things like that. But overall, most voters seemed pretty even-handed about things. I went to some Trump events, Women for Trump and a Pence rally, and voters seemed pretty solid that they didn't, you know, I mean, they felt like it was like the impeachment proceedings were wrong, but they didn't seem to be ready to out for blood or anything like that.
Well, so let me just follow up with that. Because I've got some comments here on Facebook. Jeff Burt says, after watching the Democrats, the Republicans have nothing to worry about. Whereas Levi Starks says, voters have every right to remove President Trump in November 2020. So, Mayan, on that note, have you been hearing similar notions from folks that say, you know, they want the people to be able to make their decisions at the ballot box and not necessarily through an impeachment proceeding?
Yes. I mean, black voters are a strong constituent in Milwaukee. It's a very important vote for Democrats. And there's an organization that mobilizes youth of color. And they issued it. I reached out to them to see what they're doing in terms of mobilizing. And they said, no, we're not really talking about impeachment with people, but we're mobilizing people to vote President Trump out of office in 2020. So I think there's that sort of sense. I think a lot of people in the black community that I've spoken to feel like, there was an excitement over Obama, maybe a letdown in 2016. And now it's more, there's a high level of black incarceration rate in Wisconsin. And so people are feeling if Trump did something wrong, he should get in trouble for it, as opposed to, you know, when black people do something wrong, they get the results from it. And they see this impeachment proceedings as sort of white privilege for President Trump.
Interesting. Let's go to Lynn, who's calling from Sheldon, South Carolina. Lynn, what do you think? Do you think the decision ought to be made at the ballot box, or do you support the impeachment proceedings?
Well, I support, thank you for letting me speak. I support the impeachment in that if President Trump is already trying to get a foreign power to influence our elections, how can we wait until Election Day to make a decision to try to go to the ballot box?
So you don't want to wait. Okay, Lynn, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Yosef, who's calling from Yellow Springs, Ohio. Yosef, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling to discuss the overcoverage of the impeachment. I voted Democrat since I've been able to vote. I'm 29 now. I voted as soon as I turned 18. I lean heavily left. I think that our party is in disarray in terms of who we want to represent and who we want people to think we represent. I also think that people should be talking about the coup in Bolivia. I think Morales was ousted. Mm. I think what's going on down there is a travesty. I haven't seen coverage on any major publications. I think this impeachment is really ruining coverage of more important issues going on currently. Right.
Well, so Yosef from Yellow Springs, Ohio, thank you for your call. So Yosef, they're saying impeachment is taking over everything else. Let's get one more. Joe is calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Joe, you're on the air.
Yeah, I think that the Democrats are trying to remove Trump because I don't think they think they can beat him at the ballot box. And I used to be a Democrat, but I'm an independent now. And I look at Trump and I see him doing things that is making the country strong. And I think it's across the board for all peoples. As a matter of fact, I happen to be black myself. And I am disillusioned with the things that the Democrats have been doing mm-hmm. in the past.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's doing what he said he was going to do, which I think is a real refreshing thing from a politician. Well, he's not really a politician, but it's a refreshing thing to have a someone that's elected to office follow through with all the things they said, whether you like them or not.
Yeah. Well, Joe, thank you so much for your call. Okay. Julia, Mayan, and David, we just got a minute and a half left here. Julia, give us your final thought. When it comes to voters in Pennsylvania, as we inexorably move towards the 2020 election, it sounds like issues may matter more than the impeachment. But as we just heard, the impeachment is inescapable, though. So what do you think?
Absolutely. I think I'm certainly going to be paying attention to what the economy looks like and how that's swaying voters in Pennsylvania. But in terms of... We also have a late primary, but in terms of, you know, who the candidate is, you know, and Democrats being able to vet that candidate, the impeachment proceeding is going to swallow up a lot of both media attention and just, you know, the attention span of the public. So
right.
it'll be all wrapped in, I think.
And, I mean, let's remind ourselves, it was, what, 70,000 votes in Pennsylvania that separated?
44,000. It's like less than half of the population that shows up to an Eagles game.
Okay. So impeachment could have an influence overall.
Oh, yeah.
If
we're
it's
talking
just, yeah.
very slim margins. So it absolutely could.
Okay. And David, you've got 30 seconds left here. Just a last thought from you for about how this matters in Florida.
Well, Trump probably has to win Florida to be reelected. He won Florida by 1.2% 1.2 percentage points over Clinton. And I think it'll be interesting to see because so much of what happens now becomes a Rorschach test and people digest things differently to see if people view this as Trump being Trump or as Trump inviting foreign interference at the elections and trying to bribe his way to another victory.
Mm. Well, with that, I'm afraid I'm going to have to wrap up this hour. David Smiley, political reporter for the Miami Herald. Thank you so much for joining us, David.
My pleasure.
And Mayan Silver, reporter for WUWM in Milwaukee. She's helping NPR with their 2020 election coverage, joining us from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Mayan, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks a lot, Meghna.
And Julia Taruso covers politics for the 2020 race for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Julia, it was great to have you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.